About 300 million people in 2023 decided to invest their savings in cryptocurrencies, a reality that knows a strong expansion and an increasing attention by the media, but not only. In addition, during the spring, the European Central Bank began studying the introduction of a digital euro, an electronic public currency that could enter into the daily life of almost 450 million inhabitants of the European Union. There is a lot of confusion, exacerbated by the turmoil on the cryptocurrency market. The legislative bodies of the Union, whose will is not always easy to understand, will soon decide. Gabriel Tailleur, from the Summer School on Economics and Institutions in Europe of the University of Trento, will help us clarify.
So, welcome to Gabriel Tailleur. Is right the name?
Yes, okay. It's right. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
At first, I would like to make some clarity on the topics. We all heard about the cryptocurrencies, but what are they precisely? And what are the cryptocurrencies?
Well, cryptocurrency, initially they are political projects. The idea is to get rid of intermediaries like banks or such as electric payment system. The idea is that we don't need to rely on a centralized entity to validate transactions. Therefore, we can eliminate the need for the states, for the banks, and we can transact with security, cryptography. We can transact without the need of a third party.
Okay, some say the idea of a digital euro was born on the cryptocurrency wave. Although ECB affirms it won't be one of these. So, how will the digital euro differ from crypto and electronic payment we already use on a daily basis? What's the difference?
Well, clearly, you're right. Digital euro is a clear reaction towards the cryptocurrency, because cryptocurrency, private cryptocurrency, are defined as an alternative from the monetary system, traditional financial system. So the states had to react by creating a new form of digital currency that could be more efficient than the traditional currency and includes new leverage for new powers for the state. Traditionally, what we call the electronic currency, it is still a currency that relies on intermediaries. It is like the currency we used with
card
payment, credit card. But we rely on centralized entity like Visa or MasterCard, and we relied also on the secondary banks. So with electronic means of payment, this is a technological innovation, but we are still talking about political money, fiat money or state money. Digital euro is a way that could permit to eliminate the need for the banks, but don't eliminate the need for the states. So the states could have new leverage, new way to manage the money. So there are a lot of macroeconomics objectives and outcomes for the consumers that are involved.
Okay, and during the question time with Fabio Panetta, member of the executive committee of the European Central Bank, many members of the parliament were skeptical and worried. How is the situation in Strasbourg? This was the focus of your research.
Yes, exactly. What we can see, this is the focus of my research, what we can see is that there is a clear cleavage in the European Parliament between Eurosceptic parties, for example the far right, the far left, or the conservatives, and more mainstream liberal parties like the Social Democrats, Christian Democrats, or Renew Europe. The most in favor of digital euro are clearly the mainstream parties, center-left, center-right, and the liberals. But the more Eurosceptic parties fear the idea that the state could embrace digital surveillance, surveillance of transactions, tracking of individual transactions, and it could endanger the anonymity. So there's a clear cleavage, but we do not know for the moment what will be the digital euro, what are the guarantee for anonymity, and this is still unclear. So this is why the political polarization in the parliament is really conflictual.
Yeah, and already the cash has a serial number on it, so it could be trackable as well. But the digital euro maybe is more trackable.
Yeah, it is more trackable because there are no intermediaries. Mm-hmm. It is a direct relation between the consumer and the central bank, because the consumer will have an account in euro, a digital account towards the central bank. So we do not know yet how the data from all these kind of transactions and the identity of the consumer will be used by the central bank.
We should wait for October to know more about this. So the position in the European Parliament are different between the left and the right, and Eurosceptical and Euro enthusiast. Is this even geographical difference or just political one?
It's maybe a little early to see geographical differences, but we can see a clear difference between West country and Eastern countries. So indeed, Eastern countries tend to be more skeptical about digital euro, but there are maybe other variables like the inflation rate in these countries, the idea that they do not trust European institutions. So there is a continuum between the distrust towards institutions and the idea that digital euro could endanger the sovereignty of these states.
So you think, if I'm not wrong, that this skepticism about the digital euro is well inserted in a general skepticism about Europe. How do they sustain, how the skeptical sustain their being against the digital euro? Because, okay, ideology, okay, politics, but how technically do they justify their skepticism?
Well, I think the first problem is a democratic one, because digital euro is currently created and built jointly by the Commission and the European Central Bank. So we call that the Brussels sphere. It is the idea is to refer to non-elected technocrats or non-elected politicians. So the first issue is democratic, because if the European Parliament does not have a word to define, to authorize this kind of new monetary leverage, there is a democratic issue. And the second issue, I think, is always the fear that we are going further into monetary integration, and that non-elected people could incentivize behavior of consumers by creating some ways to, for example, give an expiration to the money to incentivize the consumption of a good, and this kind of programmable
rewarding or punishing some behaviors.
Yes, exactly.
Some consumption. And I read on your paper that you used Twitter to track the opinions of the European Parliament members. How did you do that, and what did you see?
Well, basically, Twitter made public what it's called the API. It is a way to access the Twitter data, historical Twitter data, for academic researchers. So I could extract all the tweets from the member of European Parliament, the links to a cryptocurrency, digital euro, and this kind of related keywords, thanks to the API of Twitter. But I have to say that since Elon Musk became CEO of Twitter, he actually cancelled this academic access, saying that he is working for other ways to serve academia, but we do not have news about it yet. So now the API I accessed is not free anymore. It costs €5,000 each month. So this
€5,000 each month. Who could afford it?
I think corporations maybe. University, okay. I don't know. But this is a kind of an important issue for academia, but there are always other way to get access to this data.
And what did you see from this data properly?
Well, what's interesting is that Twitter really became an important tool to understand the political polarization in European Parliament, but also in other kind of political arena. Because in relation with digital euro, politicians cannot express themselves by traditional means,
ways.
Traditional ways, because the European Parliament cannot vote on digital euro. Mm-hmm. This is the matter of Commission and ECB. And so there is a growing field of research that use Twitter as a way to understand how politicians
the stream maybe under the public speech and what do they want to communicate maybe.
It is a way for them to bypass traditional means of political expression and to cultivate at very low cost an electorate. So of course we expect that all the politicians expressed their political preference very explicitly in this
maybe even in the electorate. Cultivate some opinions even in the electorate.
Yeah, it's very
to send a message.
So Gabriel, do you think that the problems that cryptocurrencies had recently with a crisis and up and down in the market influenced the opinion of the European Parliament members?
Yes, indeed we can see clear peaks in tweets related to all these negatively connoted events, such as the scandal of FTX and the crash of cryptocurrencies in March 2022. So first, it increases the probability of negativity, of negative stance from members of European Parliament. And second, it really did accelerate the regulation on the crypto sector.
And how did the summer school help you with this project?
Well, we were 15 scholars in the same accommodation, so it really encourages the interaction and the exchange of ideas from many perspectives. We have PhD candidates in political science, in economics, and in many fields of economics. So we also had to present our research or projects to senior economists, to experienced professors. So we get a lot of feedbacks from this interaction.
Sharing. Thank you very much, Gabriel.
Thank you.
This podcast was produced by Samba Radio for the Trento Summer School on Economics and Institutions in Europe. All the episodes are written and edited by Tommaso Selli.